Well, hey there. This is Deb, the Horoscopes Lady, and it is June 13th. You're listening to Deb's Horoscopes Lady. It's a sidereal astrology show where we look at where the planets really are against the constellations. It's an amazing tool. It's fun and easy to use, and once you get into the habit of it, you will never go back to the way that you used to use it. We have today, I'm so excited to have him here, and after I get through some of my announcements, I'll be interviewing Kenneth Bowser, who I remember reading way back when Dell American Astrologer. You don't hear much about that magazine anymore, but that was the magazine. If you wanted to learn astrology, oh, geez, for two decades, that's what you picked up at the grocery store of all places. I'd like to announce, let me see, oh, Angel. I'm very excited about this. Angel, he was called the Tampa Bay Sage, and that's what he's been known as for quite a long time. He was my very first guest here on BBS Radio back in February when I got started, and he is going to be starting his own show here on BBS Radio right after my show. Let's see if we can get that Wednesday morning filled up with sidereal astrologers, but he'll be starting sometime in the next month. That's Angel, and he's calling himself the People Whisperer now, but he's a lot of fun. He's a real good guy, and, of course, he's a sidereal astrologer. The Astrological Association of Northern Virginia. If you're anywhere around the Northern Virginia area, we will be meeting on June 21st, 10:30. It's a Thursday morning, 10:30, at Jamie's General Bean, which is a coffee shop and roastery local here. It is located on 13848 Lee Highway, Centerville, Virginia. So if you're anywhere in the area, Centerville, Virginia, you know where that is. It's Lee Highway, is Route 29. We'll be at Jamie's General Bean on June 21st at 10:30 in the morning. If you need to get that information again, just email me. You can go through the BBS site. It's Deborah Dillard at mybirthchart.com. Just go through the BBS site on the show's information, and you can email me, and I'll get that information back to you. All right. Like I said, we have Kenneth Bowser, who has been, oh, gee. Well, I'll let him tell you. Ken, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Hi, dear. I'm very excited that you stepped in, too, today, because I had lost for the person that I was going to speak. They had to go out of town. So thank you so very much for literally in less than 48 hours saying, yes, I can be on your show. Kenneth Bowser is a professional astrologer, a sidereal astrologer, and you started out tropical like everybody else pretty much here in the West. And if you just want to give a little intro about how you got started and what made you switch to sidereal, that would be a good place to go.
I met someone who was an astrologer as a hobby, and she did my horoscope. This is in 1970, and I was surprised to see that I could see myself in it and her interpretation pretty clearly. So I said, how did you do that? And I was off to the races. And I met Jim Lewis in San Francisco in 1971, who was surviving giving interpretations and teaching astrology. And he suggested that I attend a lecture given by a sidereal. This was in 1972.
Wow.
Even though he was a lifelong tropicalist, he had great respect for sidereal astrologers, because most of the intellectuals among the sidereal among the astrological community gravitated toward the sidereal brand. And I was impressed by what I heard, and the sidereals were very much better interpreters than the tropical variety, and so I was converted in 72.
That was a quick conversion. Good for you. That took me
a little bit
impressive.
Long. It took about 6 months before I was confident that trait characteristics had nothing to do with the signs and only the constellations.
I ran my own test. It was, to see that. I know, it was amazing. You mentioned Jim Lewis. We'll talk about him in a minute. I got to see him back in the 70s, and I guess, maybe the early 80s, when he was coming to D.C. for the Washington Astrological Forum, lecturing there, and that was, that's a blast from the past there. Let me see. You're introduced to sidereal astrology and realized, that made more sense. Now, that it was one of the biggest problems I run into constantly with people that if you just give them the, you know, the information, they say, yeah, that's me. But if you take their sun sign away, which, you know, please don't make me change my sunshine, like you were a tropically, you were a Capricorn. By sidereally, you are a Sagittarius.
That's right.
What do you say to people who just kind of like, no, and particularly other astrologers? I find I get more flack from other astrologers than I do, you know, the general public.
Well, people are wedded to what they grew up with, and they'll find all kinds of excuses to support it. But when you start hearing things like, well, for example, a tropical astrologer, a serious one, who notes the trait characteristics of the people in his or her clientele, will carefully note them, and then when explaining it, they'll say, well, a modern interpretation is deeper. For example, let's say you've got a tropical Aries who's really a sidereal Pisces. The tropical astrologer will say, well, you know, not all Aries people are fire-breathing, aggressive, ambitious, dynamic types who will run you over. Many of them are conspicuously sweet-natured, agreeable, pleasant, interested in the arts, and so you have to be careful not to be too judgmental from a sun sign. And the reason is that what they call Aries is really Pisces, and so there's a bleed over from signs to constellations that makes the signs seem unlike what they're supposed to be like. That's the major problem, and it's adulterated all the signs.
Well, it has. It certainly has. What, in your business now, you do natal interpretations, and you also mostly deal with stocks. What do you do in your business practice?
Well, it depends on what somebody is looking for. If they're interested in a particular stock, I'll look at the date of incorporation and the date of first trade, and those will pretty typically give you the information you need. The date of incorporation is especially nice because most companies are incorporated in Delaware, which American companies.
Right.
And the law there is that no matter what time of day an application or the papers of incorporation pass through someone's desk or receive a timestamp, for legal purposes, the date of incorporation dates from noon. So you don't have to know the time that things actually got rolling, only what day. And so you can evaluate a stock from its date of incorporation, and you also want to be careful that people don't invest heavily when things are not favorable for them. Because the stock market is really a big casino, and you don't win when things are unfavorable for you. And so you advise people to invest conservatively or lay low or stay out when things are not in their favor, and to be more aggressive in their strategies when things are favorable for them. I follow the indexes pretty closely, and that's been very, very instructive. I put about an hour and a half into that every day.
Wow. 365
days a year. And if you do that, you really get especially over a period of a decade or so, a really good handle on how things really work as opposed to how they're supposed to work. For example, yesterday when the market was down 130, there were lots of so-called good aspects in play, like Sun trine Neptune, Sun sextile Mars, Mars trine Saturn, Mars sextile Neptune, Sun sextile Saturn, and those are all pretty bad things, but many people would say, oh, but those are all trines and sextiles, that has to be good. And what you learn very quickly is the so-called nature of an aspect is completely, almost altogether irrelevant, and that you need to pay attention to the intrinsic natures of the planets and not assume good things or bad things from the supposed nature of an aspect. Because when in April, the market, or the Dow, had 6 new all-time highs, and in May, when it had 10 new all-time highs, Jupiter was square Uranus, in both the equatorial system and the ecliptic system, and Jupiter was square Neptune, likewise in the equatorial and the ecliptic system. And those are extremely good things for the market. The market loves those combinations. And if you subscribe to the trines are good and squares are bad position, you will absolutely bomb, because it's something that you must disregard and just look to the natures of the planets that comprise a combination.
How and do you use the sidereal constellations? Or are you just looking at the natures of planets? What?
I use the constellations. I pay close attention to the dignities and debilities. For example, for the last 2.5 years, Saturn has been in Cancer, which is related to housing, family, home. And so while Saturn has been in Cancer, a really unusual situation has developed such that sales, housing prices, and housing starts have all plummeted. And usually you don't get all three of those at the same time. And it's very consistent with Saturn in a constellation that relates to houses and homes. And so the home market is very depressed. And in terms of tropical reckoning, Saturn's in Leo.
And right, already yet, there, yeah.
Yeah, but the point is that Saturn doesn't enter sidereal Leo until the end of July. And it's then that the housing market will see some relief, although I don't think that'll show up until around September.
Because that makes
Saturn,
sense.
Yeah, Saturn goes over the sun of the U.S. stock market, which is May 17th, 1792, in the very first week of September. And after that, I think that the market in general will do pretty well for the rest of the year, although not in 2008. So I would expect the market in general to be down and seesaw up and down, but trending down in June, July, and August. And then the rest of the year will look pretty good.
For that, okay. For anyone else who might want to check that, the U.S. stock market chart that you use is May 17, 1792?
Mm-hmm. In Lower Manhattan, New York, at local apparent noon, which is, I think, 11:56:03 local mean time. They didn't use mean time
right then.
Everything was
back
apparent
then.
Time, which is sundial time, in effect.
Right, right, right. Which, that's what they had. Yeah, that's what they could do. Let me see. Okay, so that is, I wanted to ask you, as long as we're on stocks, could you explain to the audience what an index is? Because it's funny when you said that, I'm listening along because I own some stocks myself, and I don't do a lot of trading. It's like I own what I own, and I like it. Can you tell I'm a Taurus? And but I know a lot of listeners aren't really sure what that is. And then I also want to ask you about when Uranus changes constellations next spring, and then I want to hear also about the natal work that you do.
You're breaking up a little bit. How am I sounding?
Okay, you're breaking up here.
An index is a group of stocks. That is, the Dow Jones Index is comprised. It's a small index of only 30. Of the largest, most profitable, and heavily traded companies. And it's sort of a bellwether. But the NASDAQ index is comprised of a huge number of stocks that are usually not as big as Dow stocks and are more volatile and more connected with innovation and fast-growing companies. And the Standard & Poor's Index, a group of 500 stocks that are well-established and generally favored by more conservative investors, is the least volatile and the most consistent index. And it just recently broke a record about 10 days ago. That is, it went through its all-time high. It took 7 years to do that.
Sounds like a Saturn square to me. Anyway, when I wanted to ask you just briefly here, I was looking Uranus. my friend Rick Houck, who passed away, 4 years ago? And for those who didn't know, Rick Houck brought Vedic astrology, made it really popular in America. We had James Braha on the air on this show, I guess about a month and a half ago, and he's really the first one who made it readable. But the other one really popularized it. He had said when Uranus changes signs, that's when, you know, of course, sidereal signs, that was when the stock market took its dips because people were nervous about things. I don't know if you've seen that or if it's just something that's like, that's a Vedic thing and you haven't looked at that because, of course, Vedics don't use the outer planets. But I just don't know, you know, had you seen that or thought of it or anything?
Yes, but I don't think it's as important, as definitive as Rick meant to imply. My experience is that the things that really knock a market very hard are Saturn-Pluto combinations. And even though Saturn-Pluto was a 2001 configuration, you have to look at it in several coordinate systems. You have to look at it in the prime vertical and especially the equatorial system, the right ascension and declination system. And in 2000, the Saturn was opposite Pluto in Mundo, as well as 2002. It's a long-term thing when you look at it in several coordinate systems. But when the market broke in January 2000, Neptune was configured with the node, which is enormously powerful, and many sidereolists who are not trained in Indian astrology don't appreciate the massive power of the nodes. And Neptune involved with the node is very symbolic of a collapse. And that's exactly what happened in January 2000. It just took an entire year for that seesaw market to finally start trending definitively and sharply down, although there were huge, huge drops in 2000, but also massive highs. There was one day when the market gained 600 points in 2000 when Jupiter was exactly square Neptune. I don't contend that Uranus changing signs is without value. Rather, there are so many things that need to be taken into account that I haven't found accepting Saturn-Pluto, there's anything that is as consistent as that combination for definitive turning points.
For doing that, okay. Talk a little bit about, well, first of all, if somebody, and well, you haven't given your information out, shame on me, if somebody wanted to contact you to, you know, have a reading done or have you advise them on stocks, what, when's a good time for them to invest, I guess what types of things to invest, how would they get hold of you?
Well, they can go to my website, which is westernsiderealastrology.com, with no spaces between Western Sidereal Astrology. It's all run together. Or they could call me. Is it all right to give a
phone number? Yeah, if you're comfortable giving your phone number, please do.
My home phone is area code 612, and the number is 331-1475.
All right. You're listening to Deb's The Horoscopes Lady here on BBS Radio. We're interviewing Kenneth Brouser, he is an accomplished and well-respected sidereal astrologer. We're tickled to have him on the show here. Can you talk a little bit about, the other types of clients you have, the ones that you go for, and, you know, what you enjoy doing? You know, what makes you, you know, say, oh, gee, I've got this juicy chart in my hand, kind of things that you enjoy doing as a professional astrologer?
Most of my income is derived from straight natal astrology, people who want their horoscopes interpreted and then want annual updates, sometimes more often. There's some people who call me every few weeks. Most people call me every 6 months or annually. I also do a lot of work on earthquakes, have studied earthquakes extensively since 1977, and I'm very, very serious about the history of astrology and have read extensively for 30 years about who knew what, when, and what the evidence for it is. And I write a lot. I speak at conferences from time to time. But most of the time, I'm doing someone's natal horoscope, which includes naturally the straight delineation of what the planet combinations mean, astrocartography, primary directions, secondary progressions, Vimshatari Dasha directions, and especially solar and lunar returns that I consider the best predictive instrument out there.
I was going to say, if anyone would like to call in and ask Kenneth a question or both of us a question, whatever you want to do, the phone number here at BBS Radio is 877-876-5227, and that's free for anywhere in the United States. The people that you know get hold of you, are they tropicalists or are they, you know, people who have I'm talking about your first-time clients. Are they just trying out sidereal? Where are they coming from?
Most of them think that they're most. I don't do mostly astrologers. I do mostly regular folks who
right.
know what their tropical sun sign is, and I explain the difference between the two, and I give people a laminated horoscope with. Sidereal on one side and tropical on the other, not because I give equal billing to tropical, but rather so people can see instantly by flipping the thing over the difference between tropical and sidereal so that it isn't just a bunch of words or gibberish. And sometimes I'll do people who want to argue with me and say, well, I don't really care. It's not like... I have some investment in getting them to embrace the sidereal position. Rather, I want to see their horoscopes as they really are, see them accurately. And if they think that they're a Taurus when they're clearly an aggressive, argumentative, and feisty Aries, that's fine with me. It doesn't. The important thing is to see things accurately. And being a crusader will only put people off and damage the information that they might otherwise actually hear. And many people say that they haven't heard at all until they've replayed the tapes four or five times.
Many people
play their tapes in their car back and forth to work. And so sometimes they'll call up and say, I finally... understand X, Y, and Z, having heard it for the fifth time. So I don't make an issue out of the tropical sidereal thing, although I don't think tropical astrology has any merit whatsoever. And I just don't fly that flag and try to insist that they both work, which is clearly impossible. I mean,
yes.
With
you're so polite. I love that.
It's possible for both propositions to be wrong and for one to be right and the other wrong, but they can't both be right. Moreover, you have to overlook the impressions that are given to your eyes when you look up in the sky and you look at some constellation, and some tropical astrologer would be saying, oh, no, that's what you're looking at is really... Gemini. And you say, well, gosh, I don't think so. It looks like Taurus to me. And they say, well, the constellations don't mean anything. The signs are everything. That's the argument. And I find that a fatuous argument, an argument without merit, and one that's pretty easy to shoot down. But people who are convinced that they know better will just take longer to figure it out. And that's all right with me. I don't really care.
Yeah.
The whole point
I know. It cracks me up. I have I happen to be the president over here, the Astrological Association of Northern Virginia, which I keep trying to give away. It's like, could somebody please? But you know, we have our elections. We do what we do. And they'll say to me, and this happens, you know, there are people that I've known in this group for 25 years now, and they're die-hard, you know, tropical astrologers. You know, this is what they're doing. This is right, and you know, to heck with anything that seems obvious. And they used to do this with Rick Hauck, and they'll certainly do this with me. They'll come and they'll ask me these questions, and then it's like, don't tell me how you're deriving the answers, but we want you to answer us, and we know you're going to answer using a sidereal system. And I shake my head. I'm thinking, why in the world are you asking me this if you think you've got the system that works? And, you know, I'm not using that system. I don't know. I guess it's almost an odd little private joke between astrologers. There you go. You say, you know, you do your speaking gigs. When they approach you, they obviously know you're a sidereal astrologer and that's what you're going to be doing. When mm-hmm. they converse with you and show you their charts or talk about charts, do they talk tropical to you or do they talk sidereal to you?
Well, if they know any sidereal, they'll try to convert in their heads back and forth. But generally, they talk in a tropical format. And since most of the astrologers I know are tropicalists, we talk mostly about planet combinations.
There you go.
They won't change from one system to the other. And my experience is that it takes most people a long time to come around. And you need to do a lot of horoscopes to begin to see the discrepancies of the signs. I mean, it's very easy to look at Dick Cheney and throw hot, cold water over his tropical Aquarius situation because he's a sidereal Capricorn. But many people aren't as obviously wrong, especially if the sun is not really a strong body. If you get somebody who has a bunch of planets in Pisces below the horizon, but Mars at the midheaven, you might see someone who is distinctly martial because angular planets really carry the day, or as you might say, planets in Kendras,
right.
Especially if they're elevated. And especially exalted or dignified planets in their Kendras that are elevated. And so if you find that somebody doesn't have a strong sun or moon, but some other planet is really prominent, they'll show the trait characteristics of that planet most forcefully, most obviously, such that the sun sign or moon sign might be less obvious than you might expect.
And that's what, you know, people are saying. Yeah, Dick Cheney, I mean, the famous people, of course, are just, it's very easy to see, and they're good places for people to start if they're checking out both systems. If they're saying, oh, gee, I want to, you know, don't check out on yourself if you're already convinced this is what you are. Start looking at people that are in the news and say, go straight down. It's like, well, if they're supposed to have this characteristic, why do they have this characteristic instead?
I think it's easiest to deal with your friends and family, because you know them intimately. And so you only see the public facade of a public figure or hear third hand what other circumstances of their lives are. But the people that you rub shoulders with on a daily basis will show you trait characteristics pretty clearly and obviously. And that's how I think most serious players get started. They do everyone in their own personal experience. They do their teachers at school. They do their friends, their family, everyone whose birth time they can get their hands on. And those are wonderful object lessons.
No, that is true. I first started, of course, you know, like you did. I started with family and friends. And when I was switching system, I ran through all my clients, you know, and I wanted to look to see. Particularly as, you know, transits happened, you know, when did they happen? What houses were they happening? What was being affected there, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? I had one more question about, writing. Where can people read your writing these days?
I've got a bunch of articles up on my website and several others that I intend to submit pretty soon. I'm speaking at UAC next year in Denver, and it would only help me to get some new stuff out there. I've got 5 articles ready to submit, so at least one of them will appear in NCGR Journal, probably another in TMA, and a couple others I'm sending to the Astrological Association in England. so I don't imagine people are very often looking into that. But
well, we're being heard in England.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, we've got a. I get emails regularly from overseas from listening to this show because they can hear it on the archives at any time.
Oh, I see. I have a high opinion of English astrologers, actually. I think they tend to be more conscientious and less inclined to talk psychobabble than the Americans. And it's a much older tradition there. And, of course, it's the home of the great Lily. Who,
oh, yes. Yes, it is.
My heroes. Well, actually, all of the 17th century worthies, English worthies, are people that I regard very highly.
If someone was going to start reading astrology today, who would you recommend? How, particularly, I get this being a sidereal astrologer, it's like, where do I start? Because there aren't a lot of great sidereal books. And I say, you don't have to start there. Here's places you can start. Where would you recommend people start?
Well, I would recommend that they start with the Almagest, even though they'll probably have to read it three or four times. In other words, start with Ptolemy.
Right.
And it may not mean too much to them at first read. However, once they've got some experience under their belt, it will be more meaningful, and they will benefit for having already looked at it. I would look at Zodiacs Old and New, Cyril Fagan's first book, which is very much out of print, but it can be found in used bookstores, and his Astrological Origins, which came out in the year he died, 1970, and Rupert Gledow's Zodiacs Old and the Origin of the Zodiac. I think among the English astrologers that Charles Carter can't be beat. And even though he died in 1968, I think he's the best English astrologer of the 20th century, and all of his books have great value, even though he's a tropicalist, because he was a very serious player and willing to look at other things. He and Cyril Fagan were friends, incidentally. Fagan is, of course, the father of modern Western sidereal astrology, and I appreciate that he was a man sufficiently open-minded to say that you have to look at sidereal astrology on its own terms, and let's not reject it out of hand. It takes a big person to do that. Let's see. All of a sudden, some names have popped out of my head. There's a woman, an English woman, Sue Tompkins, who's written a good book on interpretations. I like her work. There's no substitute, though, for reading the old masters. But especially, there's no substitute for doing a lot of horoscopes. You have to do it all the time if you want to be really good. And it's a long, long apprenticeship. It takes decades to get to the point where you have understanding of the art sufficient to say things of value.
No, I agree with you completely.
I would also read the as much as I could about ancient astrological works, although that really gets a little bit tedious, especially it's not for the beginner. I would read Guido Bonatti, and I think that there's going to be a new translation out in English of his work very soon. I'd read Lily extensively, Christian astrology. That was the title, because in the 17th century, everything really had to have some kind of religious corollary, especially something that was associated with something that might be considered heretical, like astrology.
Dubious at best, yes. You know. No, that is an excellent book. I know what I wanted to ask you. We're talking about things going out of your head, and I do think it's because I know when I was asking you questions, Rick Houck's name went out of my head. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I knew that man for 17 years. Mercury retrograde, which is coming up, or talking about retrogrades in general, I was talking to someone else, and we're going to meet next week, and I said, oh, that's fine, I don't care, Mercury's retrograde. And she says, wow, you know, why is it all the astrologers talk about that? I said, well, part of which is because it happens for 9 weeks a year, three times, you know, each week. There's some things I do not do as a rule of Mercury retrograde, and other things, life goes on. It just is what it is, what it is. And it doesn't make any difference sidereal or tropical, except, of course, what house that it's happening in usually, or, you know, certainly what constellation it's in. How do you see Mercury retrograde for your clients, or is it just something like, okay, here it is, and we have Venus retrograde coming up too this summer, so you want to talk about those for a minute?
Well, I think that Mercury retrograde is vastly overrated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is, that its so supposed ill effects are blown way out of proportion, and that people tend not to pay attention to the problems that develop when Mercury is direct, which are far more common because Mercury is direct most of the time, than when Mercury is retrograde. So that when Mercury is retrograde, people say, aha, look at that, Mercury retrograde, and they overlook the stuff that is happening when Mercury is direct that is unfortunate. I think that virtually everything that's written about Mercury retrograde is suspect, because my observation is that nothing really awful happens with it. And a good reason, the Declaration of Independence was written with Mercury retrograde, and the stock market was founded when Mercury was retrograde. How bad could it be?
Yeah.
When Venus goes retrograde, if you know there's something really bad about this, you would expect that all the attempts to make time with one's beloved would be fumbling, bumbling attempts that would come to nothing, or that all the heterosexuals and homosexuals would switch sides for a brief foray into alien worlds. But I submit that doesn't happen. And I think that if Venus is retrograde or stationary, sitting on your midheaven, that's a really good thing. Moreover, when Venus is stationary, sitting on a woman's moon in particular, she's very much more likely to become pregnant than other times. I think that the whole retrograde business is a crock. And if you look at what actually happens when planets are retrograde, for example, all the big power outages on the East Coast, the entire country for the last 50 years, every single one has been when Mercury was direct, which is the sort of thing that you would expect from a classic Mercury retrograde situation. It doesn't happen.
No.
And the numbers of academics and eminent thinkers, engineers and scientists with Mercury retrograde natally, I think, tends to put the lie to its so-called ill effects.
Yes, I always thought it's something like the Friday the 13th aspect. If you had bad luck on Friday the 13th, it must be because it's Friday the 13th, as opposed to the fact that you had bad luck, you know, for whatever, you know, you walked under a ladder or whatever you did anywhere else. I said there's some things I will not do on a Mercury retrograde. I won't buy a new car, but I will get my car fixed. It was just one of the things I was never comfortable doing. But, yeah, I've certainly seen that over and over and over again. And, again, like you said, if people do charts, look at charts, and for the general public that doesn't even have time for that, just think of all the people you know that were born with Mercury retrograde. Brilliant minds, you know, and just they think out of the box or whatever. They think a little bit differently, whatever, however you want to say it. But, you know, you can
see. I think retrogrades might be stronger than direct
planets. You know what, and that's what that was certainly, to bring him up again, my friend Rick Halkett said, you know, he just thought certainly station planets are very strong, but that could very well be. It's certainly not the bugaboo, I think, that most astrologers have painted it, even though it's kind of fun to say, it's sort of like telling scary stories, you know, around the campfire.
But it can be bad, though, if the planet is a malefic, if Saturn is retrograde. And it's sitting on your sun, you want it to be gone.
That's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem. Back and forth over your sun three times is no fun. I know about that. Yeah, it's no fun.
Jupiter is retrograde, sitting on your sun. You don't want it to leave. And it's not like it's our damage. It's the speed of the planet has a lot to do with it. If it's slow, it's strong. And if it's a retrograde, that's bad. If it's a benefic, it's good.
Yes, no. I'm sorry, there was another time delay there. What else? There was a couple other things I wanted to pick your brain for because I guess it was last night after I finished, I thought, wait a minute, my brain clicked over and said, I've read this guy's stuff a lot, not just, you know, occasionally or whatever, again, years ago. And it was just, I knew that you were, you know, someone who did study the ancients and someone, you know, has taken this very seriously and looked all around. I think, and you had mentioned that, I guess, indirectly, when you said it takes a long time to, you know, look at this stuff and assimilate it and to observe, as opposed to, and this is something I've seen more and more of in the last, I don't know, 10 years, where people are... they're like instant astrologers. Add water, a couple internet pages, and boom! It's like I'm setting up shop here, and I don't want to discourage anybody from studying astrology, but it seems to me, and I do want your opinion on this, and maybe I'm just being too much of an old lady here, that unless you've got some time under your belt and you've been able to apprentice properly, how in the world could you advise anybody else what to do?
You can't.
Okay. I was almost ready to have my hand slapped there, but I didn't care because I don't think you can. Well, it's true because some people are like, oh, you're just, you know, that's what people said. I remember I had a very good friend who said to me, well, who was 10 years older than I was. Well, until you had your first Saturn return, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm grumbling because, of course, you know, I'm, you know, 22 or something. But she was right, man, after the first Saturn return.
I do disagree with that because there are a lot of people who do excellent work before their Saturn return.
Right, and I thought I did too, but still, you get a perspective after that.
Well, your youth is gone. You're not old, but you usually have the responsibilities of a fully adult person. You may have a mortgage, a wife, children, a job that you may have studied hard to become qualified for, and the stakes in life are higher. So when Saturn sits on its natal place, you're reminded in a big way of the burdens, responsibilities, and limitations in your life that are simply a function of where you are. And it doesn't follow that those things are really bad, but rather they would impose limits on you that you would be obliged to take into account or be a fool. So most of the time, that's what a Saturn situation does. And you just don't want to have nasty things like Neptune or Mars hanging around at the same time. And I think most people go through their Saturn returns getting sober, so to speak. I don't mean to imply that before that people are junkies or drunks or irresponsible, but rather it's a sobering experience. And you say, good grief, I am... by no means middle-aged, but my youth is in...
Right, a third of your life is gone.
Yeah.
So here you go. That's
what Saturn's about.
You had mentioned, I'm not letting you get off the air in case you're wondering, solar returns. Did you use solar returns extensively? You want to talk about those a little bit?
Well, those are horoscopes set up for the moment that the sun returns to the same place that it occupied at birth, exact to the second of arc. And a really important distinction has to be made between tropical solar returns and sidereal solar returns, because if you don't take into account precession, your tropical solar return will not be pegged to the same place in the sky that it was when you were born, because the equinox is precessing to the westward at the rate of 1/7 of arc per day, about 1 minute of arc in 13, 14 months, and a degree in about 71 years. And It's a fabulous predictive instrument, very, very precise, and it lets you know whether you've got the right birth time or not. Also, primary directions will do that, too.
Yep.
And I use them extensively, as well as the solar returns and lunar returns of the stock market and other things that I want to track carefully, and the country. And
which chart
lunar
do you
returns
use in the United States? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I can tell you that the chart I use, I only found about a year ago some text support, finally, for the time. And it was in Harper's Magazine from July 1851. And in that, it's the 75th anniversary of the signing. And in that is an article that describes the what happened, and they say, and I'll quote, "At a little past meridian, a unanimous vote was taken in favor of declaring themselves free and independent states." And in those days, meridian meant local apparent noon.
Right.
And so I did primary directions for every minute from local apparent noon until 12:15, and I found some extraordinary fits for 12:12. But 12:12 local apparent time equals 12:16 local mean time. So because most programs don't handle apparent time, and most people don't know how to deal with it anyway, you can say that the time that has text support is 12:16 p.m. local mean time in Philadelphia, July 4th, 1776. And all the primary directions, all of them, which I didn't expect, work out in such a way that it tends to make your hands kind of shake just holding the horoscope in your hand, because you realize you've almost surely got it, or very nearly.
Wow. That's cool. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut you off on the lunar returns, but I wanted to get, because there are so many different United States charts floating around.
And most of them are pretty flaky. The two principal ones are the Sibley chart. For 5 or 5:10 in the afternoon, which was done by Ebenezer Sibley in 1785, who never set foot in the country, and used a system of directions that is patently wrong, even by his own bizarre reckoning. And he sets this out in his complete illustration of the occult sciences, which I've read carefully, and I realized that he was selling a bill of goods. That there's his own technique is altogether without merit. And so the 5:10 p.m. chart not only is not supported by any kind of text document, but it's fiction. The other one that has a lot of support is done by this guy. What was his name? His initials are H.H. He was born in 1880. He uses the 2:17 a.m. time, which is just an attempt to make Uranus angular and put the moon in the middle,
right.
And it has no tech support whatever and doesn't stand up well when you subject it to solar returns.
Yeah, that makes sense, that one.
So the only one that has any tech support is the one for the slightly after noon, although some people use 2 o'clock because the decision to go for independence was announced to the assembled Congress at 2 p.m., but the actual vote was taken, according to the Harper's Magazine article, at, quote, a little after meridian. And people have overlooked that because they don't realize that that was the 18th century term for noon and local apparent noon at that. They didn't use local mean time anywhere until 1780 at Geneva and Switzerland, and then 1792 in London, and it wasn't adopted in this country until the 1840s.
What does that
and
give
so
United States rise? Oh.
Rising? Gives it,
yes.
Sidereal Virgo.
Yeah, which kind of makes sense for us.
With the Sun, Venus, and Jupiter conjoined in Gemini at the midheaven and in the ninth house. And although in terms of the Vedic way of looking at things, it would be in the Vedic 10th. It's in the Campanus 9th.
Okay.
With Mercury on Pluto.
Yeah, I'm not... I did tell you, you know, I do come more from the Vedic side, but I am not opposed to certainly the Kampana system. Matter of fact, because that was the house system that I used, I guess, when I was a tropicalist that I really liked. I thought this, it made sense to me how they did the math. That's what I liked about it, as opposed to the Placidus.
Sure. It's a trisection of the prime vertical, which has merit, whereas if you trisect the sun's semi-arc, as in Placidus, it's possible for a planet not to be in a Placidus house. In other words, out in the ozone, nowhere. Placidus doesn't work. But the guy who developed it, Placido Ditti, who was the imperial mathematicus to the Holy Roman Emperor, was a pretty sharp guy. He was a genius. And he sort of overshadowed the people around him. And so people said, well, boy, Placido Ditti is a pretty smart guy. We need to pay attention to what he says. And so people who couldn't really follow what he was doing deferred to him, and it got legs.
Yeah,
but Placidus doesn't survive in the large scheme of things.
No, I think I put it in the glossary in my book that I was trying to explain to people, you know, what the system is and how the system came out. And it was, how did I put it? Of course, I don't have it right in front of me, that he, you know, sort of the Simon Cowell of his day. And because he said it louder and bolder and stronger, everybody said, okay, that must be right. And I mentioned,
like,
you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because of his relationship with the Pope. And, then that was it. It was funny.
All the Popes had astrologers, incidentally.
Well, of course they did. Absolutely they did. And they wouldn't consider going to war or ruling or doing what they were doing without good astrological advice.
Well, I assume but I don't know that for a fact. But it is well known that they all had astrological advisors.
Let me ask you, I'll say one more question because we've got just a few more minutes here. And, you know, thanks so much. Please, before you give your information on how to get hold of you again, if anyone's just tuning in, this is when we're talking to Kenneth Bowser today.
I'm at WesternSiderialAstrology.com. And my home number is area code 612-331-1475. The reason, incidentally, it's Western Sidereal Astrology is to distinguish it from Eastern Sidereal Astrology, which is Vedic. And the issue is that astrology got rolling in the Tigris-Euphrates River Valley and the Indus River Valleys in the 3rd millennium B.C. And there was a lot of trade intercourse between the Tigris-Euphrates and the Indus River Valley civilizations, and each side claims to have taught the other astrology. And while the jury is out, both sides are quite adamant that they've got the pole position, so to speak, although I think the preponderance of evidence overwhelmingly supports the Babylonian position. Nevertheless, they're both the oldest forms of astrology, by far. I mean, nobody was talking about the tropical system until very late in the first millennium, almost surely not before Hipparchus. And even the ancient Greeks speak of the constellations and astronomical reckoning with respect to the constellations. And it's not until the second century B.C. that Hipparchus starts saying, hey, wait a minute, here we should be reckoning things from the vernal equinox, and he did that because he took some observations of some important stars and compared them with stars that were 200 years older and noticed that there was a systematic error that made him say, oh my God, the sky is moving as a unit very, very slowly. We have to hang our hat on something that won't change, which he thought would be the vernal equinox because he was completely convinced that the Earth had no motion of its own. And so he disconnected astrology from the sky and connected it to the ground and didn't appreciate either solar system geometry or that there was a southern hemisphere, which would have as its vernal equinox a moment in the northern hemisphere fall. And so it's by no means global. That is, the vernal equinox is the autumnal equinox in the summer, the southern hemisphere. And he artificially turned off one of the Earth's motions, namely precession, which got the signs out of sync with the constellations. But it happened so slowly that people don't appreciate the change until centuries have gone by.
I was going to say that's the most succinct explanation I think I've ever heard.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it is. It's like, okay, you know, because I've heard them all, you know, and I tout them, but that's the most succinct one I've ever heard. Goodness, Kenneth, you've got one more minute to wrap up, and then we are out of time for the day.
Do you have a question?
I don't have any more questions. It's been brilliant. I would love to have you back.
Well, I'm happy to be back. Let me just end with the Arabs, who were top dogs in the 8th, 9th, and 10th centuries in terms of all things technical and high civilization and so forth. They were noting in the 10th century that 20 Pisces was rising with the equinox, but they were translating everything Greek in sight. And they said, what do we do with this zero Aries equals vernal equinox business, because any fool can see the 20 Pisces rises with the equinox. And to their credit, they said, let's just go with it. It's a tradition. We'll figure out later what's the problem here. Because nobody understood solar system geometry. And until you can get your head wrapped around the way the sun and the solar system is actually configured, you won't be able to appreciate why things like that happen. That is why Pisces was rising in the first millennium B.C., or rather A.D., and there was no explanation for it that was apparent to the people who noted that difference. And remember, too, that everybody was very familiar with the sky then. It was part of the natural education of every person. And so people would note very well that Aries didn't rise with the vernal equinox, that Pisces did. It's just that the West was such a complete backwater until the middle of the 11th century, when the investiture controversy really sort of woke it up, that there was nobody who was literate, numerate, had access to records or instruments, or could make definitive statements about what was going on in the sky. And that's why tropical, based on an error, became firmly entrenched, because when it was embraced again, when the lights came back on in the West, especially in the 11th century, people went back to the old ways in classical antiquity, unquestioningly, because they didn't have better information.
And that's
but
it.
The rest
and
of the world,
Kenneth, we are out of time. You've been listening to Kenneth Bowser on Deb's the Horoscopes Lady on BBS Radio. Tune in next Wednesday, and we'll have another sidereal guest, and this time we'll get around to answering some of your emails this time. We don't lose them. We just hold them until we can do it. Thanks again, Kenneth, and I'll be talking to you. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.